So from 1976 to 2016, there was a decrease in the profitability of agriculture that was exceptionally large. So in 1976, for every dollar you put into agriculture, you would get about $1.35 back. 35% margin. We can all live on that, right? Well, that same number in 2016 was $1.14. People talk about farmers being disappointed, negative, people in production agriculture being disagreeable or upset about regulations. They've had 40 plus years of watching their livelihood get totally degraded.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Travis Chappell, and I believe that if you can connect with the best, you can become the best. So after creating 800 podcast episodes about building your network, I've come to realize that networking is really just making friends. You're doing it the right way anyway. Join me as I make friends with world-class athletes like Shaquille O'Neal, entertainers like Rob Dyrdek, authors like Dr. Nicole LaPera, former presidents like Vicente Fox, or even the occasional FBI hostage negotiator, billionaire real estate mogul, or polarizing political figure. So if you want to make more friends that help you become a better version of yourself, then subscribe to the show and keep on listening, because this is Travis Makes Friends. What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Travis Makes Friends podcast. Today, I'm making friends with Jeff and Kara, all the way from Colorado Craft Beef in Colorado. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thanks for having us, man.
Yeah, of course. Of course. Mainly just wanted to bring you on because you sent me a free box of beef, and that is the key to my heart. So thank you for that.
The first book we're going to write is called Beef is a Currency.
No, yeah. Because
when you start sending steak, people respond.
Oh, totally.
For the most part.
It's definitely different than getting like a box of chocolates or something. Not to say that I don't love chocolates, but beef is like, I got some real stuff here.
Yeah. How'd you like the beef? Out.
You know what? I was saving it for today.
Okay.
And I had this plan that I kind of alluded to before this, that I was going to have my wife cook up one of the big cuts of it for this interview, and we could be sitting here eating it right now. But then I forgot all about that this morning. So I still have not had any of it.
No worries.
With you. I have a bunch of friends coming to town.
There you go.
I don't want to get rid of all of our good beef because I'm assuming it's really good. So
we like to think so.
Yeah. I'll record a second part to this after I have it and tell everybody my honest reviews. But yeah, I don't mess around with that stuff, man. So
yeah. Actually, we have some friends that buy a half a beef from another ranch and a half a beef from us.
Yeah.
And the half a beef from us is what they feed themselves. And the half a beef from the other people is like chili, all the other stuff. So they're just like, you know, they have their private reserve stash in a different freezer that nobody knows.
Like, this is our pure beef.
Yeah.
That's for us.
Yeah. This beef came from Texas. The Colorado beef, though, we're gonna keep that over there. So you got to be strategic with your inventory.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. So let's go back in time a little bit, because I was reading through both of your guys' bios and come to find out, Kara, you've kind of been in this business for six generations. Did I read that right? Five generations.
Five
generations.
The fifth generation on the family ranch, and our little girls will be the sixth. Yeah, the early 19, my family homesteaded in Northeast Colorado.
Wow. So your family homesteaded in Colorado.
Yes.
Early 1900s.
Yeah, in the Enlarged Homestead Act, my family came out. And actually, our place where it sits today is a half a mile from the original homestead.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. When we first came out and decided the grass was belly deep and went up to the bottom side of my great-great-great-grandfather's horse, he decided he was going to stop there and be a good place to raise cattle.
So wild. So how much land do you guys have out there now on the ranch?
So our home place is around 6,000 acres. You know, we're just a small piece of that as far as what we do with Colorado Craft Beef. My dad still runs the commercial operation and has since
76.
And then recently came out with this direct-to-consumer product line. What made you do that?
Really, it was the way to take the ranch into the next generation. We've changed so much. The consuming public in general has changed quite a bit. We've gotten further removed from where our food comes from. So the thought process of going direct to somebody who's eating our product, and it came out of that. It came out of some other conversations too, you know, with my dad of what does the ranch look like for us, but then also for our kids.
Yeah.
And that's, we're like, you know, we have a different skill set. We can do it a little bit different way. And that's part of where Craft Beef came from. So.
Do you guys get a lot of shit from people these days for being in that business? Because I know that there's a lot of, you know, negative propaganda around cattle farming and, you know, veganism and climate and all this stuff. And you guys have been doing this for generations and generations. And so, you know, I can only assume that you get a little bit of that shrapnel from those wars.
Yeah. I mean, you certainly catch some of that.
Yeah.
but a lot of it's opinion based and a lot of it's emotion. Not a lot of it's in fact.
Almost none of it's in fact.
Exactly. So what's interesting is, for the most part, we don't run into them on social media. Hmm. They clearly don't come to where we live, because it's, you got to be very all direct ranches. In where you want to go. Yeah. Yeah.
You're not going to happen upon it. Yeah.
No, it doesn't you don't just naturally.
Like, we're looking for the Broncos game and somehow.
Right.
Lost.
Yeah. But in general, where we see the most people in our space get attacked is the ones that are playing games with labels or being not as transparent as they should be. And it gives somebody an opening to start really tearing into them.
Yeah.
And we just don't play like that. You know, the phone number on the top of the website rings through to a phone that we carry.
Okay.
The transparency is undisputable, really.
Yeah.
And when people want to know something, we tell them. And we hold to authenticity above all else.
So tell me how you got involved in the business.
Well, you marry the rancher's daughter, clearly.
Tell me how you got involved with the rancher's daughter.
Yeah. Through some mutual friends. I'm from Oregon. She was living in Idaho.
Whereabouts in Oregon?
Pendleton. So Pendleton whiskey, Pendleton wool.
Where's that? And
where northeast corner. Okay. Big rodeo town.
Okay. Gotcha.
So I went to school at Colorado State, got a degree in agricultural business, minors in finance and accounting.
So you had an interest.
I was always in ag, not to the level that Kara was, for sure. I worked for a lot of other people. My parents were, mom owned a small real estate company and dad worked for the government.
Okay.
So nothing too crazy, but I always raked hay and worked on farms and helped people with cows, but
gotcha.
Okay. You know, nothing crazy.
Yeah.
Nothing as complex as what Kara's family runs.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, I passed muster because when I came to the ranch, I knew how to fix barbed wire fence.
Mm.
I knew how to ride a horse.
Gotcha. Yeah. You got
all the checks. And I didn't order chicken when we went to dinner. So after that, everything was smooth sailing. Actually,
you'll probably appreciate this. The story of our first date. Yeah. You'll probably appreciate this. So Jeff was living in Idaho, or I was living in Idaho. He was living in Oregon. And, you know, he made up a very creative story on the fact that he needed to go to a northern part of Idaho that, you know, by the way of Boise, but
I went 200 miles out of the way.
He owned a map or not, but I was like, okay, so
Oregon,
yeah.
Boise, northern Idaho. It makes sense to me, Jeff.
Yes. Yeah. He went by the way of the river, I guess. But, so he came to my place to pick me up for our first date, and he was pulling, how long was that
stock? It was like a 32-foot flatbed.
Yeah, I think he was pulling a 32-foot flatbed. And, yeah, I had no lights the place I was living. And I told him, I was like, well, if you can back it in over there, obscure place in the middle of nowhere with no lights, then we can go on a date. And sure enough, he nailed it. So we went on a first date.
Passed the test.
Yeah.
Passed the test.
Yeah.
No city slickers allowed.
Yeah, that's right. At that point in my life, I was like, I don't have time.
Yeah. Yeah,
and that's fair.
To Kara's point, with the genesis of the beef company, it was, where do we make an impact that aligns with our skill set to provide the most value to the ranch?
And you decided against farmers only.
I have a face for radio, so it's the best you can
not
do.
Not
giving
a bunch of swipes. No. But they didn't see your barbed wire fixing.
That's right.
You know,
luckily, I dodged all of that, man. I was right before that. I was so glad. I've watched some of that train wreck. I'm like, I'm so glad I'm not a part of that.
So where did you guys end up meeting then?
At a mutual friend invited a bunch of us to a big concert, and we all met for dinner. There was like 25 of us.
Okay.
And she was wearing Cayman boots and starch jeans. I was like, who is that? I need to know who that is.
That's hilarious.
And like 3 months later, she finally went on a date with me.
3 months. All it took was an out of the way trip to Boise.
Yeah. No,
persistency and creativity.
Yeah. And I asked her for a number like 4 times. Then she would just stop talking to me for like 3 days.
Mm.
I would wait the traditional 72-hour cooling off period and then restart.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. So, but you're used to putting in work, right?
But
so you got to put in work.
But within the beef company, I handle all the sales, that certainly helps.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. And you said that you came from corporate sales.
We both did, actually. So I had a big background in heavy construction and corporate sales and finance world. And then Kara's background.
This was right after college?
Yeah, for the 15 years after college, it was heavy construction, finance, corporate sales. They kind of all rolled into management.
Okay.
And then Kara's background is exceptionally complementary to mine, for sure.
Yeah, I was in animal health.
Okay.
10 years.
10 years. Yes. Post-college.
After my master's degree.
So. Did you always have the intention of being back on the farm?
I always knew that would draw me back home.
Yeah.
But I siblings? Didn't. I do. I have one older sister. Okay. Yes. And then I have step siblings as well. I always knew that was home. And and I wanted to be there in some capacity, but probably not the traditional capacity. Otherwise, you know, I could have came straight out of high school, frankly, and moved into that. I wanted to kind of find my own way to add value to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, live somewhere else, kind of understand the world, understand what I was able to bring back to the home operation.
Which apparently you've done fairly well.
In 2016, we moved.
Basically, end of 2015,
We moved back to very close to
the ranch. Nice. So tell me about all the hubbub behind Yellowstone. Is this something that you guys caught wind of early on? Like, was this something that just like blew up in the rancher community first and then it just like took off from there? Like, how much of it's accurate? Is it accurately depicted of ranch life? Is it completely inaccurate? Do you like the show? Stuff like that.
I think the easy answer is it could be accurate depending on where you are regionally.
Okay.
Because everybody wants to think ranching or farming or agriculture is the same. Oh, if you raise corn, you raise corn the same in Indiana as you do in Oregon. Mm. It's a different climate. Mm. So how a ranch would operate in Western Montana versus how a ranch operates where we're at in Colorado versus a ranch in Texas is all exceptionally different. Mm. So that's the ag spin. From the traditional rancher spin, though, I'd be curious to hear Kara's answer.
Yellowstone definitely has brought back a lot of visibility to what we do.
Sure.
That hasn't been there, especially in mainstream media, let's call
it. For sure.
It's just been lost for quite a while. Tombstone, but I mean,
I was going to say not even lost, but ostracized.
Yeah,
really.
For sure.
And so it's brought some of that romance, that visibility, that whatever other adjective you want to use, but it's kind of brought that back into mainstream media, which I think has been wonderful. Some of the depictions, we could probably have some banter.
Maybe dramatized.
Maybe, makes for good TV, but may not be.
There's probably a little bit less murder on most ranches.
Typically.
Typically, yes.
I don't know.
We don't have train stations.
I don't know. The first time I met Kara's dad, we did have Rocky Mountain oysters for dinner, and I thought that was a message.
Just subtle.
Yeah. It could have been, to be fair.
Yeah.
Oh, man. That was the biggest thing about that show, man. It's just like, I was like, man, this is the unluckiest group of ranchers in the entire world. Like, how is this? There are this many things that befall this family. It's so hard to even follow towards the end of it. I don't know. Did you guys like the show in general? Like fans of it?
In general, I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I thought they depicted the story well.
Yeah.
I think some of the accuracy of when they start talking about cattle and how they're going to do things is not quite what it
they could use
really
a few more consultants
is.
On the set.
They should have them based on the stable of people they have involved.
Sure.
But some of it I think is a talking point, not necessarily reflective, but it's such a small part of the story.
Sure. Yeah.
So
it's fair.
But I think by and large, what Yellowstone, Teton Ridge, and that whole business conglomerate has done for especially ranching and beef has been overwhelmingly positive in connecting people back to that.
You know, what's interesting is that it was one of those shows that I was surprised that took off, and not because of any of the reasons we already talked about. It was just because like the distribution was so far off of the beaten path. Like it's not a Netflix show. It wasn't HBO. It wasn't on regular television. It's like, well, I mean, I think it is on regular television, but you have to like it was a nightmare for us to try to find out how to watch the show. But so many people told us to watch it. We were like, okay, well, we got to watch it. So we got to like go to Google to figure out where we watch this thing. You know, it's like, oh, I got to get a subscription to Paramount Plus to go. Like the amount of work that went into watching the show comparatively to like all the other shows that have taken off was that a really, there's a high barrier to entry, but I think that's like really easy to explain that because they didn't think it was going to do well. Right. So like they shopped around probably to a bunch of different streaming services. The only one they could find was this other deal. And then it blew up anyway, because there's so many people that resonate with the story and there's so many people that still care about that world. Like when you said it was kind of forgotten for a long time and ostracized and kind of almost like put down as the redheaded stepchild of like, we're not allowed to promote anything good about this because we want to make sure everybody thinks it's bad.
Yeah.
You know, cause that supports the narrative.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's where a lot of people really get disconnected from where things come from. You know, the typical modicum in society is where does your food come from? But man, we're all wearing cotton. Is that cotton from Texas? Is it cotton from California? Is it cotton from Turkey? Turkey does a lot of cotton. So when you start talking about the supply chains and some of that, people getting connected to the resources they use in their daily life, you know, whether it's a microphone or, you know, where do the glasses come from?
Mm-hmm.
It's so, people are so disconnected from all of that. It's mm-hmm. just magic. But then if you take the ranching side of Yellowstone, you're horseback, you're in the mountains. It is epically beautiful on that show.
Mm.
And I will say their shooting on that show is top notch.
Mm. Oh yeah.
How much more romantic do you get? I mean, how many guys are like, hell yeah, I could do that. That'd be a good summer. Right. And how many girls look at Rip on Yellowstone? They're like, look at that guy.
Yeah, I could do that for a summer.
That's right. So it's interesting when you start spinning that around in a way that people are so disconnected from something.
Yeah.
And that something becomes so romanticized, and it's also so historical. So mm-hmm. then you have the Yellowstone spinoffs of 1888, 1923, mm-hmm. after World War I, at the end of some of the Native American wars. Like, it's so resonant, and it's such a big part of our history as a nation.
Right.
Man.
Yeah, that heritage
is deep. And it spiked tourism all over Montana, and migration even to Montana. Like, at the time that it blew up, it was in the middle of all COVID and everything like that, you know, and people in the coasts were looking places to move. Like, I had some friends in Montana that were just like, man, this place is like doubled in size.
Yeah.
Just with the people, the sheer volume of people, the real estate's insanely inflated because everybody's moving to Montana or getting a second or third home in Montana anyway, at least, you know. But I think the show obviously had a major impact on that.
Yeah, the irony is the first season of that show was shot in Utah. It was not shot in Montana.
I didn't know that. Wow. Didn't know that.
Well, the West kind of looks like the West. It just depends on which valley you go to.
I was gonna say, because you guys are, you said northwestern or
northeast Colorado.
Colorado.
Yeah. So we're in the Sandhills. It's very grassy.
Okay.
Rolling plains. Imagine buffalo running across the prairie. That's where we live.
Okay.
It's pretty cool when you look out your window and you're like, you know, other than a couple fences, this thing hasn't changed in thousands of years.
Yeah. That's not what I see when I look out my window.
Yeah.
I see a construction project here and another construction project here. Yeah.
I remember looking at Kara's dad one day. We were out riding pastures and I looked at him. I go, hey, man. He's like, yeah. It's like, your office is pretty sweet. You know, you can see for 30 miles. The only thing you can see is your cows. Your phone doesn't work. It's perfect.
How much is your dad doing in the business now? Is he still kind of running everything and kind of large and in charge? And
oh man, that man, he's pretty incredible. Yeah. He's buttoned up on 70 and he's still,
he's Kevin Costner.
Oh man. Yeah. He's
the rancher.
Yes. Yeah. He still buys all the cattle. He runs all the cattle. He does all of the things. I mean, he's in better shape than a lot of 20-year-olds I know.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
When you've been doing that work since he was 12, probably.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. And he runs the commercial ranch. Colorado Craft Beef is Kara and I's company.
Okay.
As our way to pay homage to previous generations and start to set the ranch up for another direction. So
essentially you guys are your own entity, but you just source all of your beef from the ranch.
So we actually source our own cattle.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. We bring cattle in. We work with some strategic partners.
Okay.
We have done some work with Kara's dad. So it's a way to try to expand some of the economics of direct to consumer to more of the region. So the biggest issue you run into in agriculture, I'm a numbers dork, just to put that out there. Yeah, I don't rope, Kara ropes. I can wrestle cattle all day long and I will make you a mean spreadsheet or cook you dinner. I'm pretty good at that
too. Makes a mean steak.
Freaking the sheets, baby, freaking the sheets.
That's right. Yeah. Actually, Kara bought me a deal that sits on my desk that says, don't worry, I have a spreadsheet for that. And that couldn't be more true. But if we look at the economics of agriculture, so from 1976 to 2016, there was a decrease in the profitability of agriculture that was exceptionally large. So in 1976, you could do, for every dollar you put into agriculture, you would get about $1.35 back. 35% margin. We can all live on that, right? I mean, then let's be fair. We all have to pay the light bill. Well, that same number in 2016 was $1.14. So when people talk about farmers being disappointed, farmers being negative, people in production agriculture being disagreeable or upset about regulations, and let's understand that they've had 40 plus years of watching their livelihood get totally degraded.
Right.
And when we think about that within the Colorado craft beef model, we're selling beef for more or less what you pay at a good butcher shop, mm-hmm. only we aren't trading three layers of margin to get there.
Yeah.
We own our own direct supply chain.
Cutting out all of the middlemen who take a piece every time a transaction happens.
And we don't have them over our head with all the leverage.
Sure. Yeah.
Because they don't have to take your cattle. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if you are in a commodity business of selling fat cattle to a large processor,
yeah,
there's only so much you can do. Or if you are a t-shirt manufacturer in the US and you need to buy t-shirts from China, mm-hmm. there's only so much you can do.
Right.
So you have to secure the supply chain.
Yeah.
And
own each part of the process.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Yeah. And that's what we started with in 2017. And just this year we got done doing it.
Yeah. Wow. That's a long time.
Well, it's a way shorter road than a lot of our people that do it with us.
Really?
And it's an impossible road for another sector of agriculture that can't get it done. So we've been exceptionally fortunate because we found like-minded people.
Yeah, that's awesome. And now you guys have built a good partnership with several of these kind of influencer types that are eager to kind of dip their toe in the water in this world, right?
You know, one of our main partners, his name is Jocko Willink.
Who's that?
Right. Actually, a few people I've met are like, who's that? And they're serious. I'm like, huh, weird.
Yeah, didn't expect that.
You don't have a phone, do you?
Yeah.
So Jocko, I mean, the easy way to describe it is the founders of Origin USA. Shout out to Origin. I'm wearing one of their shirts today. Jocko Fuel mm-hmm. and a bunch of their like-minded, mainly veteran crew mm-hmm. have invested with Colorado Craft Beef.
It's not a bad partnership to have. How did you start the conversations? Like, how did you get your foot in the door?
By making friends, dude.
Perfect. Let's talk about it.
Yeah. Luckily, I came from a sales mindset.
Okay.
And, you know, before I met Kara, I got told no a lot of times. Mm-hmm. What's the worst thing that's going to happen?
What is the worst thing that's going to happen?
And we started talking some strategic partnerships. Luckily, we knew a couple of the same people, and it was very arm's length. And
over, well, how did you meet?
Just through some mutual friends, you know, made some connections and got the intro call.
Okay.
Got the intro call invitation for 15 minutes.
Was there an agenda on the intro call?
There was.
Okay.
We were looking to do, so part of the strategic move we made with these gentlemen, who we couldn't be prouder to be partners with.
Of course.
Quite frankly.
It's a great brand to be associated with, especially for your target market.
Man, it's not even that. It's the understanding what they want. Hmm. You know, if we talk about the heritage of ranching, mm-hmm. what's more American than that?
Yeah.
I have a ton of military friends, and watching them salute the flag mm-hmm. is more American than what we do. And I can't think of something that's a close third. Hmm. You know, how was the West settled?
Yeah, right.
How were we able to settle the West? It was because of people in the military. It was because of putting America first. And that's what Origin does. Mm. You know, this t-shirt that I'm wearing today, they have looms in Maine and they make their own t-shirt material. Mm. They source the yarn from Texas.
Wow.
It's all America all the way through. And the original conversation we had was, hey, we're gonna invest in this harvest facility. Because one of the biggest bottlenecks we've had with growing Colorado craft beef was you're speaking for harvest slots for cattle 2 years out.
Can you explain what you mean by that?
So a harvest slot, to make it as soft as possible, is when we take a live calf, live steer from our feed yard mm-hmm. to a building and they come out the other side of the building in a box mm-hmm. ready to go to consumer.
Yeah.
So as a processing facility, they harvest the animal, they convert them to steaks. We have a 21-day dry aging process on all carcasses. And the biggest bottleneck we've had to growth is not sales. It was, we can't forecast 2 years out when you're growing at nearly triple digits every year. Then you start to get to a capital question.
And, yeah.
And now you get to the
point.
Now
you can't provide the supply for all the demand that you're out generating.
Yeah. So then you have to throttle marketing down, which sure. has a negative tail that trails you for another 4 months. Mm-hmm. So it's this constant hiccup
yeah.
of riding a bucking horse without a rope. Like mm. you're just hoping for the best.
Yeah.
And so about 2 years ago, we secured the contract to procure the harvest facility. And then we went out looking for the investors to get it done. And we originally had some just typical money guys that would,
sure.
that would throw in. But man, what value are they going to provide? They're going to ask about their return mm-hmm. and they will likely answer the phone. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, what are they going to do? And we have some additional processing space. And I was like, man, it'd be really cool to talk to somebody that could maybe partner with us and help us do some of this. And then I was like, well, why not find some guys that are doing well in business that want to help us in moving product? And then
people with distribution,
not even distribution, people with a reach. We can do all the distribution.
Yeah. Well, that's what I meant. That's what I meant.
Yeah. The direct.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. And then we got to talking and one thing led to another. And next thing we knew, we're on the phone with people that I'm like, hey, Kara, we have a call with so-and-so. And she's like, what? How? And I was like, well, I just go around making friends. So actually, last week we were up in Maine at the Origin Immersion Camp.
Nice.
Hung out with Jocko and all the guys.
Yeah.
And Kara texted one of our good friends and she said, I don't know how we got here. Yeah. And what did Catherine say?
Something about Jeff making friends, but she didn't say it nearly as PC.
No. I think she accused me of having a big mouth. I would call it making friends.
It's both. It can be both.
Yeah. Yeah. But when you get those guys that are America first.
Yeah.
That's what we are.
Well, you touched on something huge. If you're in the business world and you know business people, then you know money is easy. Yeah. Like the money part. Like getting capital, securing investors, raising money, all that stuff is relatively simple. Mm-hmm. But when you can find somebody who not only is willing to give you money, but also shares like similar values, they care about the thing that you're talking about, they actually like give a shit about the product or the mission or the vision, or like they have an active like role in seeing you be successful. Mm-hmm. The delta between this type of money and this type of money is huge. You know, and people don't give enough thought to that. They just want to go get money. It's like, well, you can get some money all day, but is it dumb money or is it smart money or is it neutral money? Because there's all three. You know what I mean?
It's 100%.
Like every time you want to go for the people that are going to give you smart money, the people who can actually help from a strategic, you know, standpoint. And you guys nailed it.
Like to think so.
Yeah.
Now we've been super fortunate, and what's been fun to watch is, money aside, business aside, you know, you meet your investors' families. It's not a guy with a checkbook with an email address.
Sure.
It's, you know, you're on a conference call, it's late at night. Hey man, I'm gonna go put my kid to bed. Can I come back in 10 minutes?
Yeah,
absolutely. That's what this is all about.
Yeah.
That's what the beef company is about. It's not about the money. It's not about any of that.
Yeah.
It's about sharing with people what we're all doing together. Mm-hmm. You know, coming on a podcast to discuss, you know, why did you do it? You know, you're networking and, you know, hearing your intro, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. networking, it's actually just making friends.
Yeah.
There's nothing truer has ever been said.
Yeah.
Well, now how about making some friends over a steak on the same table?
Right.
Man, well, do we know a distillery guy? all of a sudden, man, we got a party and everybody's rowing the boat the same direction.
Right. Yeah. That's so, so massively valuable. For all parties that are involved, you know, it's that kind of rising tide raises all ships type of a thing.
Yeah.
Instead of being cutthroat against everybody and all that stuff, you know.
Well, and that's the interesting part within ag, or, you know, probably not the podcasting space too much, but business in general. Everybody thinks that if I sell one more thing,
I took that from you.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Right.
And that famine mindset is just garbage.
Oh, it's like it's a cesspool of disease. You know, it's just like, ugh. Getting around those types of people is just exhausting.
Yeah.
You know, and then you can never trust them because you never know if they're actually bringing you a real deal to the table, if they're just trying to like get one over on you so that they can put a tally, you know, put an extra point in their tally on the W, you know. It's just like, well, what are we doing here, man?
Man, if you can't look in the mirror at the end of the day, you got way bigger problems.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Kara, how have you been with like growing up as a rancher and being on that side of the business, and now kind of starting a brand new venture using all the knowledge and everything you've taken from school, your experience in corporate, and all the work that you've put in, you know, post ranch, and now working on this new project with your husband and then like really pushing it forward, seeing some success with it. What are kind of some of the differences for you between like that type of work and this type of work?
I've always been a why person. So my why has always driven me pretty hard.
What's that?
I love the life. I want to impart a difference, like whatever that may be. Like, gosh, that was even my college entrance essay, was making a difference in ranching industry, I guess. Mm-hmm. Let's call it that. And then that just got bigger the more I saw how we functioned at home, but then how other producers function, because I worked with so many every day. There are wonderful people and do wonderful things, but there was a disconnect between what we were doing on the ranch versus a consumer. Like, it was just so very, it was just like so vast.
Yeah.
The differences.
Big gap.
It was a huge, huge gap. Mm-hmm. And even there was a gap on the ranching side, frankly, with all the segments. Then we get to a consumer, and I finally, talking to Jeff on the way here, I'm like, I think I've distilled it into like a simple story of, anytime I talk to a rancher, I ask them what they produce. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them, they're like, well, I raise a 600 pound calf in the fall. I sell in the second week of October every year. And I had to just look at them and be like, we produce beef. That's what we're producing.
Yeah.
You know, and we're producing cattle. We're producing essentially widgets of beef, however we want to distill that. And if we don't have a consumer on the other side of that, that appreciates and embraces that and loves it and has a great eating experience with a steak, what are we here for?
Hmm.
You know, we don't really have a why if we don't have a market of a consumer that loves that steak and connects with that story. And, you know, I have some other philosophical things of like, I mean, even Yellowstone's done some great things for our industry to kind of tie that back together. But
yeah.
I'd love to be that piece that kind of helps make that more cohesive,
you know, sure,
to where we can,
which is exactly what direct to consumer really does, right?
Yeah.
It gives people the ability to choose where their beef actually comes from.
Yeah.
Cause like before, nobody thought about it. You go to the supermarket, go to the grocery store, and you just pick up some beef and throw it in the cart.
Mm-hmm.
You have no idea where it came from, who raised it, if it has antibiotics or any of the other things in it. Like you just don't know any of that stuff. And then people started caring about it again, you know?
Well, the weirdest one was COVID. Now, I'm not sure how it was down here.
Yeah.
Well, there was a lot of grocery stores that didn't have beef. They didn't have meat.
We luckily did not have that problem. I would not have stood for it. We would have had to move or something.
In Colorado.
Well, in Montana, it was bad.
Really?
The toilet paper issue.
Yeah.
That was the same thing with beef in a lot of different areas.
No kidding.
Which was not a beef chain
problem.
I was going
to say, what would happen?
It was a supply chain problem.
Yeah.
Because when you're outside of a metro area, say you're in, you know, Western Montana, back to our Yellowstone guys, the grocery store in that town likely gets 2 protein shipments a week from a wholesaler. Well, that's 2 trucks. Just coming once a week for mm-hmm. 2 trucks. They don't have extra trucks sitting around waiting to dispatch. So if somebody in Western Montana says, I got to have enough meat for the next week because we're going into lockdown, mm-hmm. and there's 10,000 people in that town, there's not more product coming.
Yeah,
because the myth that went around was, oh, nobody could get steak because we shut down beef processing. That's inaccurate. So in the U.S., it went down about a third.
Okay.
So
demand increased by more than that.
Yeah, by a lot more. Yeah. But you didn't have extra trucks because those semis, you know, a truck with a trailer behind it.
Yeah.
$250,000.
Yeah.
Give or take.
Yeah.
They don't just have them sitting around.
Right.
There's a capital expense there.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, you know, in the U.S., we harvest around 600,000 cows a week. It's 35 million cows a year.
Yeah.
The cat or the hog market is 200 million pigs a year. And it's 2 billion chickens, if I remember correctly.
Oh my gosh.
So, yeah, we went from 600,000 to, I think the weekly cutout at the low point during COVID was 440,000 cows in a week. But you just didn't have a way to move them.
Sure.
You just don't have more trucking assets. And then when you would get, somebody got lucky in Fort Collins, Colorado, and got an extra truck, it was gone immediately.
Wow.
So this flash buying mindset that messed up the toilet paper market for months did that. And the number of customers that we got at Colorado Craft Beef that are still with us today that said, I just need to know that I can pick up the phone and call somebody if I need beef.
Hmm.
And some of them stuck around. Some consumers have amnesia. It's just very interesting because Temple Grandin from Colorado State University actually wrote a paper right after COVID. And she said that COVID was a proof that our supply chains are efficient, but fragile.
Hmm.
The second you start to pull on a string because they are just in time delivery, bang, 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 everything's landing.
Yeah.
And that was one of the things, one of the reasons that we put the deal together to acquire the harvest facility.
Hmm.
Because we are now stemmed stern
control of the
internal.
Process. Yeah.
We can handle the whole system. We don't rely on another company.
Amazing.
We've secured it.
Yeah, that's fantastic. That's all that vertical integration sometimes is necessary just to deliver a good customer experience, right? Because I mean, that's like the biggest thing for you guys is like, we'll ship you a free box because we know it's going to be good and we know you're going to order again. Like you need repeat customers, not just first-time customers.
Yeah. And our retention rates are insane.
I assume.
The first time somebody lands, I mean, for them to not order within 3 weeks again is pretty uncommon.
I was going to say, I'll be hesitant the way that I say this because I don't want to talk crap about this other company because they sent me a lot of free meat and it was good. But even just the difference, like I told you, I haven't eaten it yet, but just the difference of unloading that into my freezer and being like, oh my gosh, like this is a steak. Like this is real meat right here. You know, and you guys probably know what I'm talking about, but again, not throwing under the bus. But yeah, it was like, oh, this is like this and this is like, it was just like, oh yeah, this is beef. Well, this isn't like commercialized doorstep stuff.
We get a lot of phone calls from people that are like, well, you know, we wanted a custom way. We wanted this. I'm like, listen, the beef I'm sending you is the beef I feed my family.
Yeah.
And we are ranchers.
Yeah.
You'll be good. If you are unhappy with what comes, you let me know, but I think you'll be okay. And we have yet to have anybody call after that conversation.
Nice. That's awesome. So, that's awesome. What's been the most surprising part for you guys? I'll start with you, Kara. What's been the most surprising part of like running a company like this?
Ooh, that's a good one.
It's obstacles and everything.
Man. Right?
Choose your hard.
Yeah. Frankly, I think some of it is mindset for me.
Okay.
I never really envisioned this path.
Okay.
You know, you grow up in production, you think that you're going to do production, and you're just going to do it better. But then I saw a different light, you know, when I started working in corporate world and sales, and some of the kind of the visionary lights went off of like, man, we can do something different. Let's do it.
Yeah.
You know, but it's always in the back of your mind, like, so, so once you get to the point where you've truly proven concept.
Yeah. Where there's some actual evidence that it can be done.
Yeah. Wrapping your head around it and being like, man, here we are.
That is a difficult time. Yeah. The time between having the idea and then like everybody talks about their ideas, right? Everybody's got ideas. And that's the stage that most people stay at for like 30 years.
Well,
they talk about the one idea.
To stay there.
Of course, because you start the idea and then it doesn't work out. Then it's like, then you know that it sucked. And you know what I mean? You actually have to do real work at that point. You can't just talk about how awesome the idea would be. But then you start the idea. And there's like this phase that happens in between the time that you start it and the time that you have some sort of validation that it's actually something that's going to work. And that time is like, especially if you've never done anything like it before, you're just kind of like, is this going to work? Like, I thought this was a good idea.
This.
Everybody told me it was a good idea.
Yeah, we may or may not have went through that same iteration like 1,000 times in the last 12
months. And then it continues happening in perpetuity. But the difference is like the next time you have that, you're like, okay, well, it worked out last time. Right. So like the 48th time you do it, you're like, all right, well, this is nothing that we haven't come up against. We just have to figure out a solution to the problem. And that's the difference between people who sit on ideas for 30 years and then people who actually take an idea to fruition, start a company, partner with people like Jocko and his bunch, and actually like do something about it. Is like you get the same feeling of uncertainty, the same feeling of insecurity, but you push past it and you figure out a solution to that problem. Then another problem comes up and you're like, all right, well, you know, still not sure this is going to work, but we figured it out last time. So,
well, we were on the plane to Maine last week to meet everybody. What was going through your head on the plane?
Are we really doing this? we're really doing this. We're on the plane.
Imposter syndrome starts creeping its head in there. Like, you don't deserve to be at this meeting. You don't deserve to be hanging out
only
with these
people. Like 3 times an hour.
Yeah. No, I know exactly what you mean, man.
Well, it's like, we're going to get off the bird in Portland and there's going to be a, ha, 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 we got you, get back on the plane and go back to Colorado.
Yeah, sure. Oh, or it's going to be like, oh, there's 3,000 people at this event. It's just, and I have to pay for it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not going to be what I thought it was going to be.
Yeah. It's been a wild ride.
Yeah.
Especially like the genesis of the holidays within the beef company. Because we do a ton of business around the holidays, corporate gifts and, you know, all the stuff.
Makes sense. Yeah.
Like the first year we packed the Christmas boxes in our kitchen. And nice. The second year was in the garage. And the third year was in a new building we built during COVID. And the fourth year was the new building we built during COVID and the walk-in freezer. And now it's like...
Walk-in freezer, baby. Yeah.
Oh, now
that's when you're stepping in the lap of luxury.
Oh,
that's what it felt like.
Yeah.
Actually, the look...
it sounded sarcastic. But
The look on Kara's face the first time we loaded that freezer.
Yeah.
I was like, hey, do you want to look in the freezer? She's like, Yeah. I don't know. Don't tell them about that. That was.
Can we fit what 40?
Yeah, about 45 whole steers in the freezer. Oh, in the box.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's a big ass walk-in freezer.
That was a lift.
Because before you're doing that, you're just, what, you have a bunch of different standalone freezers, or what do you do?
Yeah, we had a bunch of chest freezers.
Yeah.
And we stored some at the harvest facility that we just acquired and go get it in the backseat of the pickup and move it 20 boxes at a time. And then it's like, oh, now you got the freezer. Now I'm like, man, we need like a reefer trailer.
Yeah.
It's just the scalability. Everything grows.
Right, That's what happens. You're building something of actual value, right?
Well, the good news is we got this guy that we're working with that talks about execution. So yeah. I don't think we have
an option.
Yeah, I don't think we get an opportunity to not execute at this point.
So. I was going to say, well, at least you can slough off your mistakes on other people, right? He's cool with that.
Yeah, ownership's not a big deal either. Yeah.
No, not even the slightest.
No. And the rest of the team couldn't be more aligned. I've been involved in a bunch of different businesses, and it's, you've always got that one guy. That sure. Like, what the hell is he here for?
Especially if you've been in corporate sales.
Oh, yeah.
That's a nightmare.
You've been in corporate.
Well, who's that boat anchor?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. You got people, you know, stab each other in the back to get ahead and people kissing butt and spreading rumors. And it's just like, I thought we were here to work. Like, yeah. I didn't think I'd have to deal with like elementary playground, you know.
Oh, that's,
I was a high school girl. I graduated.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. I remember graduating.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure
I left this stuff behind.
Yeah. That was one of the things Kara and I really worked on with the messaging for the beef company was so many people in direct to consumer or even what I would call small business marketing try to get ahead by standing on the throat of their competitor.
Hmm. Yeah.
Man, those people are our neighbors. We share fences with them. Maybe don't do that.
Right.
And that's been probably the most rewarding thing for me. Is to watch that messaging land.
Well, that's the thing that, like, this whole thing's talking about making friends, you know? And the bottom line is, like, I don't know if you guys saw this study that came out from Harvard that was evaluated. It was the longest standing study on human happiness that's ever been done. It's like an 80 or 90 year study. They follow these people from the time that they were at Harvard all the way through to now they're in their like late 90s, mid to late 90s, the ones that are still alive. And they measured all these different things that they were assuming, you know, they had the hypotheses at the very beginning of what would lead to happiness. And they had all these ideas of what it was and even stuff like, you know, your nutrition, your cholesterol level or whatever. But they found by far the number one thing that correlates the most to happiness and fulfillment at the end of your life is the quality of the relationships that you have, the closest relationships in your life. And it was one of those things that I read when I was just like, yeah, material success to me does matter. Like, mm-hmm. I wouldn't be in business if I didn't want to make a lot of money. Like, of course. And I'm totally willing to admit that and that that's part of my desires in life. And I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. In fact, I think there's a lot of things right with that. Mm-hmm. However, if you do it at the expense of relationships and friendships and, you know, being good to people, you get to the end of your life and that's all you have. And that is not a good situation. Sure. You know what I'm saying? So like the way that you guys are doing it is the right way. It's like there's a path to where we can all be living in and thinking in an abundance mindset where we don't have to be this like scarcity, you know, if I win, that means you lose type of a thing. It's like, no. We can find a way to all work together. We can all increase a little bit more and we can all like still be friends and even better friends at the end of the day because of it. And that's like, that's the world that I try to operate in is building relationships with people like that.
Sure.
Where it's like, let's all be successful together. Just because I'm doing this doesn't mean that you can't be. And doesn't just because you're doing that doesn't mean I can't be doing something like this. You know what I mean? So the fact that you guys are willing to admit that in a really small industry too, where you probably could get away with like having marketing that targets, you know, certain competitors of yours and, you know, whatever the case may be. But I think you're right about that. I think it would eventually just, you know, it's going to stop and then it's going to turn people against you that don't have to be against you. You know, mm-hmm. like you don't have to make enemies for the sake of making enemies. Doesn't mean you shouldn't stand up for what you believe in. And you're probably going to naturally make enemies because of the things that you believe in, but doesn't mean you have to go on purpose, make enemies with other people who you wouldn't be enemies with unless you picked a fight with them to begin with.
Right.
You know, but there's so many people that just decide to do that. And it blows my mind.
It's very bizarre to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't get the philosophy. It's like, where does this end? You know, like follow this through to conclusion. What's the best case scenario?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Like best case scenario, everybody's still upset.
Yeah. And worst case scenario is even worse than that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like either way, it's not going to end up good for you. You know, if you have any desire to be in this industry for any length of time,
mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Well, and one of the things we've shared, and Kara and I both coached our competitors, literal direct beef competitors out of Tampa, out of Texas. People will call. I talked to a guy this week from Kansas. Hey, I'm thinking about going direct to consumer. What can you help me with? Because for years we have shared on podcasts, if you want some help, let us know. Like, not because we know it all. That's certainly not the case. But we learned a fair amount by getting beat up in the marketplace. And luckily we were able to weather that storm.
Right.
And, you know, not in a competitive way against the big four. That's a fun data point. It's 85% of the beef chain is owned by four companies.
Wow.
So it's really us against them.
Sure. Yeah.
Which is a hard line to draw. But if you, you know, we kill or we harvest 35 million cattle annually, 15% of the market is open for direct to consumer like us. That's 5 million annually. That's a pretty big number.
Right. Still. Yeah.
I'm not going to get a percentage of that.
Yeah.
Neither are the 10 people we know that do the same thing.
Right.
Why are we not all helping each other?
Well, and to me, if you follow the line through to conclusion for you guys in that specific industry, in 50 years from now, it'll probably be the opposite of that, where 85% is direct to consumer.
Yeah.
You know, because like the model makes so much more sense. Like there's leaves more margin for the people that are actually in the business. You can source your food from the source that you want to get it from, which matters to people now, and it used to not, right? Like there's so many additional reasons to get it done that way. Like auto ships to your house, it's easier that way. You don't have to go to the grocery store. You don't have to find out all these different things about the beef that you're buying and if it where it came from. Like it just makes so much more sense that I feel like, you know, once people get over the like stigma or the thought of like, yeah, but it's meat. You know what I mean? It's just like people have this like weird thing. But like once people get over that, it's I feel like the market's gonna just go whoop.
You know? Yeah.
Most people are just gonna have it delivered to their house because why not?
Yeah. Yeah. The convenience, the simplicity of it, the auto renew. And I can't remember the last time I was actually in a grocery store.
Yeah.
We do the pickup.
Sure.
Don't even go inside.
Yeah.
We have two small kids. So
yeah.
Hinders that ability.
Exactly. Yeah. As do we. Yeah. Exactly. We just do almost Instacart or whatever. You know.
Oh, they deliver it here.
Yeah.
We have to drive.
Yeah,
that's fair.
We still need to drive. But.
That's fair.
It's only 30 miles. It's no big deal.
Just deliver it. You know what I mean? Just get some deliverers out there.
I think where we live, they'd have to use a wagon or something. It'd be no good.
It'd be like $300 extra on your grocery bill.
It'd take 2 days.
Just for gas. Yeah.
So.
Well, what are you guys working on now? What's got you excited these days?
Well, man, the deal closed 2 weeks ago.
Wow. Congrats.
So
that's very recent.
Oh, yes.
Very recent.
That's where we're working for sure.
So my hair's not smoking anymore, but it's still a little warm. You know, we're dialing in a lot of the operational stuff and making sure everything's tightened up. And I mean, Kara's going nuts on the meat science side to make sure our quality is always perfect. And
yeah.
I don't know if you want to touch on that with Travis's box of beef and why his is going to be awesome.
Yeah, please do.
Kara's the meat scientist. I'm the chucklehead that talks too much.
Well, and I would even definitely not a proclaimed meat scientist, but I know quite a bit about, like, if you want to do jujitsu speak of like the ranching world and kind of how the meat got in the box, I'm probably a solid like brown belt, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah. Of all the things, but there's many people that are black belts and they're individual piece of this.
Sure,
so,
sure.
But from just a meat science perspective, like there's once again, a lot of things that the common consumer doesn't really know about beef in general, like how cattle are produced and how they're fed and, you know, how old they are and how much difference it makes from a harvest perspective, all of the different quality control things we put into place to make sure that meat is the highest quality that it can be.
Yeah.
And those are things that just really aren't thought about. And frankly, we do. We think about all those things. So
are there any like, I guess, misconceptions about like what you guys do, the industry as a whole, that you've seen a bunch of, you know, I guess, marketing pieces around that you're like, that's just not true?
I'd say in general, you know, if you want to talk about maybe more activists, just the common thought process that if we are producing cattle to produce steak, that we don't care about them. And that is so far afield.
Yeah.
And we deeply care. It's basically we're giving them the highest quality life we can,
yeah,
with knowing that they're going to sustain our lives.
Yeah.
And that's something that I don't take for granted. Sure. I never have. I mean, even as a kid, I mean, frankly, I am an animal lover. through and through. Ask Jeff. If I could collect more, I would, but we kind of have a cap on that, on how many, you know, we can collect, and our children are the same way. So I love these animals so much that I want to do everything that I can to make sure they have the highest quality of life possible.
Yeah.
But I also know that that life has to end so ours can sustain.
Mm-hmm.
And I take that very seriously. Yeah. And I'd say, you know, to the consuming public, ranchers across the country do as well. Yeah. They share in that sentiment. And that's something that, like, seems to be lost. You know, the fact that we're producing animals for food.
Yeah.
There's just some nuances that are lost in that. And the sure. fact that we really genuinely care so much that we go above and beyond to make sure all those things are right for those animals and their quality of life.
Yeah.
So we can continue our quality of life.
Sure.
So.
Does it matter? I know all these kind of buzz terms people like slap on labels. Which ones matter? Which ones don't matter? Like, you know, grass fed or USDA choice, or like, what things should you actually like care about versus what things you're just like, ah, that's just marketing. They slap that on there just to make you think it's better.
I'd say it's what matters to you.
Okay.
You know, if quality, high quality beef matters, you know, look for a USDA choice label.
Okay.
To know that, you know, your choice or higher USDA prime.
Okay.
You know that has met quality specs. So it has to meet all of the different details.
Quality in terms of how it's raised, or?
Quality of the product.
Okay.
So basically that is indicative of the internal marbling. So the fat that's inside that product,
okay.
That's what that is. That choice label, choice prime, select, okay. All of those is indicative of the internal marbling and
those are
the product.
Choice is like third, prime is... Like
so the basically the top, the highest quality would be prime.
Okay.
You have Wagyu that they're graded above that. They have mm-hmm. their own different scale. So you have the Wagyu scale, you have prime, you have choice, and then you have select.
Got it.
And the caveat of that is that's all fed beef. So that's cattle that are under 30 months of age.
Okay.
So there's a little kind of a kicker in that of they're the only ones that technically can be graded like that.
Okay.
Under the label, the USDA label.
And what is the Wagyu?
It's like, so you've probably seen like Wagyu A5.
Oh, I've eaten and enjoyed a lot of it, but absolutely. I'm curious on what makes it that
it's,
much better.
It's breed specific. So most of the American Wagyu, it's a cross of Wagyu cattle, which is a breed of cattle that came out of Japan.
Okay.
That they have the genetics that will allow them to marble that much higher than the breeds that we have here. But most of any American Wagyu typically is a cross of an Angus and Wagyu.
Interesting.
But that allows basically that level of marbling that's above and beyond.
What makes it so damn good?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah. It's the fat, frankly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fat.
So. All day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if it comes down to it, are you picking a ribeye or a filet?
I'm ribeye all the way. Ribeye cap. If I could just cut all the ribeye caps off, I would do that.
See, and I'm more selective about where we're at.
That's a very fair point.
That's true.
Because there's some restaurants that I go to that I'm like, their filet is just, it's too good for me to turn it down.
Yeah.
But I mostly enjoy ribeye.
Yeah.
Like a good bone-in ribeye from somewhere, or like a tomahawk from somewhere. I might dig into one of those because I do like that fat on the, like, right around the bone.
Oh, so, yeah. It's perfect.
Oh, man.
Yeah. I'm a little more selective about where we're at and how they prepare food.
Okay.
Because some of the best ribeyes we'll have are at our house.
That's fair.
So.
Who cooks? Who cooks the? You're the
yeah,
cook.
Okay. I do all the. I wouldn't say all the cooking.
Okay.
Kara cooked the other day, and she's wearing a Band-Aid.
I had to tell her 3-year-old daughter. She's like, "Mommy, what happened to your hand?" I'm like, "Sweetie, mommy cooked. That's what happened. That's why
Daddy
cooks."
I tried to use a spatula.
Yeah. The pan burnt me.
What about your dad? Your dad?
My dad. Yeah, he mans a grill. I mean, that's.
Well,
yep. My dad is.
I'm gonna invite myself to a Colorado cookout.
If you give us enough time, we have a fun event we've done for 5 or 6 different groups now that we call Steak School.
Okay.
And we get a ribeye, a New York, a tenderloin, and a sirloin off the same animal. And we walk through it like a wine tasting. This is the flavor of the steak. This is where it sits on the animal. This is why it eats this way.
Bro, name the day. And I will bring a group of people.
There you go.
That watch and listen to this episode, and we will come out there.
There you go.
And I'm not joking. I will be there, bro.
Yeah.
That's my shit right there.
Yeah. It's a great time. The interesting thing for me has been the number of consumers that air quotes know stuff because Twitter told them.
Yeah. I can't imagine a more frustrating group to deal with when you guys have the backgrounds that you have.
Yeah.
That's got to be.
Somebody just a couple weeks ago was like, "I've researched this a lot." And they said it 3 times. And I don't want to get into what they were talking about, but I'm like, Kara has 10 years of education and 10 years in the industry.
Right.
What
and
possibly,
5 generations of knowledge passed down to her through her father.
And I mean, what possibly makes you think, like, I'm not going to go to a cabinet maker and be like, bro, I got a circular saw. Yeah. I could totally make that.
I've read a total of 7 articles in the last week. So,
yeah. And that's probably the coolest part about what we've been able to do as a company is take Kara's scientific understanding of cattle, the feeding process, meat in a package to go to a consumer and craft that entire process. Mm. I mean, the craftsmanship that she has imparted upon our entire system has been outstanding.
Yeah.
And that's what's fun for us.
Sure.
So kind of my caveat to the, you know, USDA Prime, USDA Choice, if you're buying at a traditional grocery store, those labels matter a lot.
Okay.
Because that Prime has more internal fat
than
a choice.
Than a choice.
But if you're buying from us, we don't pay to grade our cattle because we hang the cattle for 21 days as a whole carcass and we dry age the whole animal before we break them into steaks. So that grade is no longer as critical.
Hmm.
Because if you buy commercial steak at a grocery store, which by the way, that's safe, no big deal, it's all inspected, that those cattle that go through those big processing plants, if they're there more than 3 days before they're gone in a box, it's an operational failure. So you haven't had the aging time. So you need it to be prime so that it's more naturally tender.
Gotcha.
With our internal processes, we can age for 21 days. So now that label's not as critical.
Yeah, the designation just doesn't matter quite as much.
Exactly. It kind of washes it out.
Sure, sure.
To that point, our cost of harvest and processing is higher because we're at a much smaller scale.
Sure.
So my typical statement to people about what labels matter, what don't, man, if you're just reading the labels at the grocery store, understand that every one of those costs a lot of money. That's a marketing game. I'm not saying we couldn't do that, but for us to claim a certain labels could be upwards of $3,000 or $5,000 a year per label.
Yeah.
So if those labels matter, maybe don't follow the labels so much. Find a local producer. Doesn't have to be us.
Yeah.
I mean, you're in Vegas.
Yeah.
There's a ton of people in California that make great product. Mm-hmm. Arizona is a big cattle feeding center. You can do a lot of different things. But if those labels and those practices of raising cattle and how they're harvested and all those things matter, vote with your dollar and make sure you know where that dollar is going. That's really what I try to talk to people about is, man, we can read all the labels we want.
Sure.
We've seen mislabeling, not in beef, but just in food and manufacturing.
It's like non-GMO. It's like, like everything is. Yeah, gluten-free water. Yeah, it's a great example. It's just like,
100%.
Shit.
Yeah, thanks for telling me.
That was never a risk.
Yeah. Right. No. Okay, gluten-free oranges. Sweet. They don't grow wheat in Florida, right? So it's one of those things that if all we're going to do is read the labels, man, you can't really dial down what people are after.
Yeah.
But most of the consumers I've found that really want to track the labels would be better served to go direct to anybody, to any number of other producers. We actually had a gentleman who works at a hospital down in Colorado Springs, reached out to us, and we talked for probably 40 minutes. I was driving down the freeway. And he goes, well, why should I switch to you? I have a farmer down here I like. I was like, you absolutely shouldn't.
Yeah.
He's like, why not? I said, I'm not here to poach people.
Right.
If you got a good guy that's more local to you that does great, stick with him by all means.
Yeah.
I'm not here to take customers. And he buys a box of butter every 6 months. Great guy.
Mm-hmm.
But it's that, you know, communal mentality.
Sure.
It's trying to drive the bus forward for everybody.
Well, that's what happens when you're mission driven rather than profits driven, right? It's like, of course you want to make money. It's a business. Mm-hmm. And like, we can all agree on that.
The light bill does not pay itself.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Exactly. But when you're more mission oriented, those are the kind of things that you can say. And in my opinion, always makes you a more powerful salesperson anyway. When you don't come with that, like, you know, desperation, you don't reek of desperation when you're trying to get people to, you know, enjoy your product. And I think most people can sniff that out anyway. I was listening to some people talk at the gym the other day. They were standing next to me. I used to sell a bunch of different stuff. I used to be in door-to-door sales for 5 or 6 years. And solar was one of the products that I sold. And these two guys were arguing and they're both selling from different companies. And it was just like, they were saying different things. And I was like, you guys are saying the same things. You're just like arguing about it because you have the same, you basically have the same product, but you've convinced yourself that yours is better than that one. And he's convinced himself that his is better than yours. It's just like, you're talking about the same thing. And ultimately, the customer is going to get the same experience from both of you guys because you're selling the same thing all the time, but you're trying to tell yourself that you're not because it makes it easier for you to sell it in your mind. When in reality, if you're just like, yeah, sure, go with them, mm-hmm. you know, it might actually make that person be like, oh, okay, well, I kind of like you better.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. So. There's a lot of people in the sales game that want to win so much.
Right.
They won't lose a battle to win the war.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that strategic.
Yep. They burn and turn, man.
Oh yeah. And it doesn't, and they'll be gone, man. The only thing you see is taillights.
Yep.
It's the taillight warranty. Yeah, right? That's right. The contractor rules. So it's just interesting when you get people that don't see that bigger picture.
Mm-hmm.
But man, what it's done for us, aside from our outstanding partners, even more important is our team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of the people that we have that are helping us, because we can't do it all.
Mm-hmm.
People are working today and we're just hanging out with you. And
you're working, bro.
Yeah.
So am I.
And the loyalty it buys when they see you hold that line.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, whether it's your partners or your people or your kids, man,
yep.
Be that guy.
Yeah.
Be that guy every day. Good things should happen.
Where should people go to learn more about you guys and Colorado Craft Beef and everything you got going on? Where should we send people?
Yeah. ColoradoCraftBeef.com is always a good way. We have some new products that are already in development that are going to be rolling out for Q4.
Cool.
I got some new merch coming. We've got a lot of different things in the hopper.
Sweet.
Probably going to do
We have a trip coming.
Yeah. We have this guy from Vegas bringing a busload of people to the ranch. What I would recommend, if you go to the website, we'll have a newsletter feed pop up.
Okay.
Sign up for that newsletter. We're doing a big giveaway in the next couple of weeks for well into the four figures grill that we're partnering with another company.
Great.
The moving parts right now is unbelievable. So
what's the best grill?
It depends on what you're cooking it with.
Okay.
I mean,
I have a Traeger. Is that good?
Traeger's okay.
Okay.
For where you live, it's outstanding because you don't get it cold. We use a Grilla grill. They're made in Michigan. They're double insulated. So
okay.
When the wind's blowing 40 miles an hour, it doesn't matter.
It does matter. Yeah.
We've got some good friends that love the Big Green Egg when you want the charcoal.
Mm. We cooked a couple turkeys on one of those. And I got to say that turkey meat was real moist and tender.
Yeah.
As much as I hate using the word moist, it's just, I don't know how else to describe it.
We went a whole hour and you didn't even talk about it.
I know.
But yeah, man, just hooked on all Instagram. Yeah. We're hooked up everywhere.
Cool.
Except for TikTok. I've posted, and I put one video on TikTok. So we're officially on TikTok.
Yes.
That was like 8 months ago.
Yeah. Well, the cool thing about TikTok is that you can just take everything you were going to post on Instagram Reels and Facebook Reels and just throw it on TikTok too.
One of these days.
Yeah. Yeah. Just add it to your list of to-dos.
It's
not like you have anything to do.
No, I got people I got to deal with, right? But hey, man, thank you so much for having us.
It was a lot of fun.
Thank you.
I genuinely enjoy the conversation. I appreciate you guys making it out while you're in Vegas. I will definitely be cooking up some of that meat this weekend. Let you know how it goes. I'm not the best cook, but I've gotten better over the years when it comes to beef and things like that. Anyway, anything else, I don't know what I'm
doing. So if you go to our YouTube channel, last plug, there are Steak School videos on our YouTube channel that break down every cut and how to cook it.
That's the best place. You know what? Scratch everything we just said. Go to their YouTube channel, Colorado Craft Beef.
Yeah. Right?
And go learn how to cook some steak. And then if, you know, eventually you're just going to want to try theirs anyway. So go check out some of the stuff they got going on. I'm sure you'll be hearing this name a lot more often after you just inked this deal with Jocko and his partners a couple of weeks ago. So I'm sure you'll be hearing about Colorado Craft Beef a lot more. Guys, thanks so much for doing this. It's a lot of fun.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Boss.
That's it for today's episode. Thanks for spending some time with me and my friends. If you want to be better friends with me, then head over to travischappell.com/team to subscribe to my free newsletter, Your Friend Travis, where I share what's on my mind about life, building a business, raising kids, being married, and anything else I would normally share with my close circle of friends. That's travischappell.com/team. And my biggest ask of you, since I'm sharing my friends with you, is to share this episode with a friend of yours that hasn't listened to the show yet and leave us a quick 5-star rating in Apple Podcasts and in Spotify. It would mean the world to us as it helps us make sure that this show continues to be more valuable to you. Thanks in advance, and I'll catch you on the next episode.
A new year, time for new growth. Grow your education and skills with Herzing University. Our online behavioral health programs fit your schedule and time. From an 8-month diploma program in health and human services to a 36-month bachelor's in psychology. Grow your behavioral health career with us wherever you are in your education. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Visit us online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109. Online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.